Everyone can hear me? Awesome. Does this work? All right, before we start, a quick quiz question for all of you. Do you guys know what I'm talking about over here? Anyone? Winner gets an Xbox. I didn't hear that. Somebody said? Legal fines. Yeah, pretty much you got the gist of it. That's the reason why we're all here. All of these guys got fined by the United States, unfortunately, for not providing email data when they were requested to. And that is effectively what we are going to be talking about in this session. So my name is Deepak. I'm a program manager in the Exchange Archiving and Compliance team. So my team does specifically the archive mailbox and all the features around legal hold and e-discovery and auditing as well, because that's really important for you guys. I'm actually kind of surprised by the turnout over here, because the more I've been reading about the laws of the EU, they are very different from the laws of the United States. In the United States, for example, this session we had almost 500 attendees. And there's a reason for that, is because the fines in the United States are a lot higher, whereas in the EU, the privacy laws are given a lot more importance, if you say. So the privacy of the individual working for the organization is given more of importance over here. But I understand that even though that is the case, you guys are all still open to litigation, and that's the reason why you guys are here. So how many of you here are using Office 365? Okay, just a handful. 2010 on-prem? 2007 on-prem? Okay. And the remaining? Anyone still on 2003? Oh, just a few. So for all the people who are using 2010 on-prem, you pretty much know what the compliance features are. The archive mailbox, for example, we introduced in 2010. It's called the personal archive mailbox. What it does is it gives you an opportunity to take the data that you were taking outside of Exchange and journaling and not do that anymore. Instead, use Exchange itself as your store. How many still use journaling solutions? You know, third-party journaling solutions where you take the data out? Okay. And I'm pretty sure you guys find that expensive, right? Then that's the reason, again, why you're here. So the archive mailbox is a great solution for cutting costs for you guys. So let me go back and tell you the three big takeaways that I hope you will get from this particular presentation. The first one, we want to reduce your risk. And this risk that I'm talking about is legal risk. The first important thing is, when you are asked for evidence, you should be able to provide it and prove that you are tamper-proof, which means that data has not been deleted, the data has not been modified, and our in-place hold feature will help you do that. The second thing, simplicity. Today, if you use your third-party journal, you know, solution, you have to deploy add-ons in Outlook. You have to deploy journal rules, and you have to manage two separate, you know, places for e-discovery. You don't have to do that anymore in Exchange, because it's all in place, and you get one single location for managing all of these. The even better part about that is RBAC, because if I'll be showing you the screenshot of EAC and also showing you demos. We've basically combined all our compliance scenarios into one tab in EAC. So you can effectively manage your RBAC. If you have your law officers or your compliance officers, you can give them access alone to e-discovery. So it's really easy to do. So we've really simplified, you know, the admin experience and the law officer experience. What we've also focused on in this release is the end user experience. One of the big requirements that we put in when we were designing is compliance should not affect the end user experience or the workflow. And we've taken extra effort to do that, and I'll show you both in OWA and Outlook. And last but not the least, We want to save you money. The offerings in Office 365, again, are really cheap. I think it is $3 per user for an Exchange Online Archive feature in Office 365. It's the same thing in Exchange 15 as well. Whereas if you're doing on-prem, I guess it's your basic enterprise Cal, and you will get all these features for a really low price. You don't have to do any journaling anymore. So, as I mentioned before, these are the four main things I'll be talking about. Archiving, which is an in-place archive, which is similar to your primary archive mailbox. Your in-place hold and discovery, and I'll tell you what in-place hold is and how it is different from legal hold. How many of you actually have deployed archive mailboxes in your organization? Well, that's a lot. How many of you have legal hold turned on in your organization? Oh, that's fewer. So I'll tell you what legal hold is, because I think that's pretty much the most defining feature. And then finally, I'll also talk about MRM, which is records management, which is a significantly important feature for reducing your risk. What MRM is going to do is help you delete stuff on time. So it's, I know we've confused the term retention to a certain amount in Exchange, but what MRM is plainly deletion policies. So I'll talk about all of that. So getting into archiving, I'll switch over to a demo because I want to show you guys how easy it is to actually deploy an archive. And I'm pretty sure all of you have seen this before. Mouse. No luck. All right. So this is my EAC. As you can see, I've got my recipients over here, which is all the mailboxes. This is Exchange. This particular tenant is an E15 tenant in Office 365 that I'm demoing on, but it is a live tenant. So this is subject to all the data center SLAs. If you see, I've got all my mailboxes over here. I've got all my compliance management over here. So I click that. And so if you see, all the compliance features, so you've got your in-place hold, e-discovery, you've got auditing, you've got DLP, I think there's a session on DLP very soon, and then you've got your MRM, which is retention policies and tags. And finally, for the people who are unconvinced at the end of this session saying, no, this is still not good enough, we will help you do journaling as well. So all of this stuff is located under compliance. So it's really simple, really straightforward. Let me go back and talk to you about archiving. So now, let's say I want Aziz, right? I want Aziz to have an archive. How easy it is? I just go here and click Enable. Just waiting for a couple of seconds, and that's it. It's that easy to deploy an archive in EAC today. If you want to do it in using your PowerShell, it's simply enable mailbox user-archive. And all the same things that you got in 2010, you got in 2013. So if you're using Office 365, for example, and this is very important, you get a 100 GB archive mailbox. So you get a 25 GB primary mailbox and a 100 GB archive mailbox. Along with that, there's also this concept of the dumpster. Unfortunately, it's been renamed recoverable items, but everyone knows it as the dumpster, so I'm going to call it the dumpster. We get 30 GB of dumpster space in your primary and 30 GB of dumpster space in your archive. So if you add it all up in Office 365 for a single user, you are getting 100 plus 25 plus 30 plus 30. That's 185 GB of storage per user in Office 365. We actually have seen mailboxes grow to almost 400 gigs in Office 365. So we have like primary mailbox of 200 gigs, archive mailbox of 200 gigs. And you guys are welcome to do that in your on-prem installation as well. What we've proved, though, is we can scale. And the mailbox can scale, the store can scale to the really, really high limits imposed by the archive mailbox. How many of you are planning to deploy 2013 Exchange? In the time frame, anyone from now until 3 months, within 3 months? Okay. And what is the client that you guys are planning to use? Which Outlook client? All of you are moving to 2013. Okay. So I have good news for you. If you have Outlook 2013 and you have, you know, Exchange 2013, you really don't need the archive mailbox, to be very honest with you. And the reason is really simple. The archive mailbox till now, even in 2010, has been, we've been able to grow it 100 gigs, but so can the primary mailbox. And this is very crucial because your primary mailbox can be your archive. The reason we split it was two reasons. The first one, Outlook 2010 in cache mode could not handle anything over, let's say, pushing the limit 20 GB of data in your OST file, right? So if you were syncing everything in your primary mailbox, then that would crash your Outlook 2010 once it crossed a certain limit. But in 2013, we have a neat new trick, and I'll show you what that is. So this is my Outlook 2013. And if I go into File, Account, and I'm going to go here and say Change, it's this guy over here. In cached exchange mode, I can control the amount of data that gets downloaded to my OST file now, right? This is, I think, the single greatest feature that Outlook 2013 has built, because this way your OST is never going to crash. And you as IT admins can control through a policy, and I've got the details in my slide deck if you want the registry key and all those things. You can actually control and push the policy that you want. So for example, over here, if you deploy 2013 for the first time without changing anything, you get a default of 12 months of data that gets downloaded into your client. But you can change it. You can make it 6 months, you can make it 3 months, whatever you want. So this is a really cool feature. But then you might be thinking, OK, what about the stuff that's older than 12 months? If it is not in my OST, I am using cache mode, then what really happens? So again, the Outlook guys have answered your question. They've pretty much said, anything that I'm not finding over here, I will go look for it on the server. And so if I go here and say, H, for example, right there. So this button, if you see there, all the way down, find more on the server or more, it's just going to go and fetch all the items that are not in your OST file from Exchange server. So if you guys are thinking about deploying Exchange 2013 and using Outlook 2013, you don't really need an archive mailbox. And that's the bombshell I wanted to start with. But for other people, archive mailbox makes a lot of sense. The other reason we built the archive mailbox was so that you guys could, you know, locate your primary mailbox on one database and your archives in a separate database. So that will help you do some load balancing. And if that is still a big requirement, yes, you can do an archive. And what is the big difference between journaling and archive? Anybody? Archive mailbox? Well, not true, because if you place a person on hold, then even in the archive mailbox, you cannot. So the biggest difference is in your journaling solution, you make a copy of what you are actually getting in your primary mailbox. Whereas, think of the archive mailbox as simply an overflow container. So you have two glasses with you. You're pouring water into one. This thing's going to get full and eventually flow into the other one. So that's all it is. Whereas in the journaling solution, every drop of water that comes into this glass, is a copy is made and sent to another glass that's sitting somewhere else. So that's two places that you have copies with, and you have to manage both of that. In Exchange, in the archiving solution, you don't have that problem at all, because it is one instance, you get one message, and because of the fact that it is in place, I can actually go and, you know, do my searches on tasks, calendar items, anything that you don't actually have to send out. Even drafts, for example, they are preserved. So that's the single biggest thing about the archive mailbox that I wanted to talk to you guys about. Now, from an end user standpoint, what are the features that we introduced? So previously in Exchange 2010, we did not have an integrated search experience. So if you see here in 2013, for example, when you log into your primary mailbox and you do a search, You get the option of saying you want to search just this mailbox or the mailbox and the archive. And if you're in conversation view, you get items that are in the same conversation but across the primary and archive, they would still appear in the same conversation view. So from an end user experience standpoint, this is really, really useful. So even though an item moves to the archive, it is still accessible through search. And we've done a lot of studies, and that's pointed out to the fact that people only use their archive mailbox or the data in the archive mailbox once in 6 months, for example. So the primary access method for the archive is actually search. So that's why we focused on this particular scenario. The other thing that I wanted to talk to you about was how does it actually, you know, how do items move to the archive? So the way that happens is through policy, and it's called the move to archive policy. And when we designed that again, we made it really simple. So let's say I'm a person who likes to file stuff in folders, for example. So anything that Bharat sends me, for example, I put in a Bharat folder. Anything that somebody else sends me, I'll put it in folders with their names, right? Now, as the items age, and I say move anything older than 6 months to the archive, and let's say Bharat sent me an email that is 1 year old, and when the policy runs, what it's going to do is it's going to find that item. It's going to see that that folder does not exist in the archive, and it's going to create that folder in the archive and put it there. So this way, when the user knows, let's say, for example, I'm searching for items from Bharat, but I'm still using an older client, what I do know is I will find that item in my Bharat folder. So even in the archive, I will go look for the item in the Bharat folder, and I will be able to locate it. So from an end user experience standpoint, it's really simple, it's really straightforward. So those are the two big items that I wanted to call out for the archive. So what does it actually look like from, you know, an end user standpoint? So this is my Outlook. So if you see in my Outlook client, I've got online archive. So I've actually got two accounts here. This is my Microsoft account, and I've got an archive for that. And I've also got an archive for Garth. And so all I need to do is click, it'll open up and show the items in the archive. So at this point, I don't have any items in my archive, but as I keep moving items in there, it automatically pops up. So that's the archive feature that we've built in Exchange 2013. And I talked to you guys about the slider. So this particular slide has the details of the registry key. If you guys are interested, you can go take a look at it. And I guess this is posted on the site. So once you finish this presentation, you'll be able to download this. What about link? We've talked about Exchange. We've talked about, you know, how messages and calendar items and, you know, tasks and journals are preserved. But the new feature, the single biggest feature, you know, from Microsoft standpoint in 2013 is the integration across SharePoint, Exchange, and Link. So in 2010, we were talking to a lot of customers, and the single biggest complaint was, why is Exchange not talking to SharePoint, or why is Exchange not talking to Link? So that's what we decided to address in 2013. So in 2013, we have integrated discovery across SharePoint, Exchange, and Link, which means when you do your discovery from SharePoint, you'll be able to access all the documents, all the emails in the Exchange mailboxes, and all the IAMs. So the IAMs are kind of, you know, what we've managed to do is pull the data from IAM into Exchange itself, right? So if you place a mailbox on hold, then that particular user is placed on hold, which means all their link content is also archived into Exchange, and it is stored in the dumpster, which I'll be explaining in a couple of minutes. So this is the new link architecture, where everything from link is actually archived into Exchange. So if you're using link without legal hold, you would probably see it in your conversation history folder in Outlook, and that's where you'd be able to access all your IAMs as well. If you are on hold, then we use the dumpster, and I'll talk about that soon. All right. How many of you know what legal hold is? All right, any one volunteer? What does it do? So it prevents delete? Or modification. That's precisely it. So legal hold effectively means immutability. Now, immutability has a lot of definitions, but the single biggest thing is you cannot delete an item and you cannot modify an item. Now, one thing that people do forget is, oh, item is okay. What about I go and delete the mailbox itself? We prevent that as well. So when a person is on legal hold, both the items cannot be deleted, cannot be tampered with, and the mailbox itself cannot be deleted. It will fail. So that's how we implement immutability in Exchange. Now, when we did Exchange 2010, we were starting off, right? So at that point, we said, let's put the mailbox on legal hold. What does that mean? Any item, doesn't matter what it is, the whole mailbox is under legal hold. You can try to delete anything you want. It doesn't matter. It will never get deleted. Where does it go, though? It goes into the dumpster, where it is stored in a hidden folder that is not accessible to the end user. So in the United States, this is the scenario that we typically talk about. I'm an inside trader in Wall Street because everyone likes to take pot shots at Wall Street right now. And I'm doing insider trading, for example. And I've told my client saying, hey, this particular stock is going to go up very soon, so I think you should buy some right now. And then he realizes what he's done. He realizes that he's made something that is incorrect, and he goes and tries to destroy the evidence. Now, in Wall Street, you know, people know that these things happen, so they put people on legal hold. Now, if I'm on legal hold, for example, and I'm the trader, what would I do? The first thing I would do is go and delete an item over here. So I'll show you a demo of what a typical criminal would do using Outlook. So I've got my inbox. Let's say this is the item that, you know, is a problematic one. So I hit delete. It's gone from here, but I know it's going to be in the deleted items folder. So I go here. I'm smart, so I hit delete over here. This will be permanently deleted? Yes. But I know I'm smarter than this. I'm an Outlook power user, which means I know that there is another layer of deletions available in here. So I would go here and say recover deleted items, right? Now, this is going to show me all the items that were deleted from my deleted items folder. And I don't know why it's not showing up, but it would show up here. And once I click that and hit purge, it would be deleted permanently, right? At this point, people think, yeah, they're clear. But when legal hold is on, even from here, this item does not get deleted. It gets moved into another hidden folder in the same recoverable items, IPM non-IPM subtree, and it's stored there. And the beauty of this is it is accessible to e-discovery. So if I'm the lawyer coming in and saying, hey, what is going on? Did this guy actually say something to his client? And I say, okay, I'm going to pick Deepak's mailbox, and I'm going to search for, you know, any keywords relating to this particular stock, for example, and it is going to go and fetch that particular piece of information and show it in e-discovery. So this was the legal hold feature that we built in 2010. However, in 2013, one of the big pieces of feedback we got was, I don't want to hold the entire mailbox. Because if you think about it, I place my CEO's mailbox on hold, and it grows around 10 GB per year. In Microsoft, for example, our VPs and corporate vice presidents and all those guys, their mailboxes grow 50 GB a year, right? So if I'm going to sustain any amount of growth like that, it is not sustainable. The other part about that is I also have to go and discover all of that stuff and copy it somewhere. And again, if I'm a paralegal, this is a disaster scenario for me. So what people wanted was a scoped hold, which means only the items matching a certain query or matching a certain set of filters hold that for me. Anything else, go ahead and delete it. I don't care about it. But anything that matches that particular query or anything that matches that time frame, please hold it for me. So that's the feature that we built in 2013, and that's what we call in-place hold. What does this mean, though? So the typical scenario is e-discovery, right? So you go and enter a query, you find the items that match the query, and you copy those items and give it to the opposing counsel. What we did was we plugged into this particular workflow called e-discovery and said, at the end of the query, just say, hold these items. So people who are used to doing e-discovery in 2010 will find this particular transition to in-place hold really simple. Let me show you what I mean with a quick demo. So I've got Internet Explorer. So when I was in New Orleans, I did this demo on Chrome, and people told me not to. So Internet Explorer. But I still wouldn't delete this, though. So in my compliance management, I've got all my in-place e-discovery and holds. So let me walk you through a typical e-discovery scenario. So I give it a name. So I go hit new on my eDiscovery console. I say, TechEd Europe, demo. I don't need a description. Hit next. Now, this is going to go and pick all the mailboxes that I want to search and effectively the mailboxes that I'm going to place a hold on. So I can either choose to say search all the mailboxes or I can say specific mailboxes. So in here, I'm going to go and pick mailboxes that I know. So I know this guy sounds like he's a criminal. This guy's a criminal. I don't know. Probably one more person. Yeah, Katie. All right. I'll hit next. So this is your typical e-discovery scenario. Now in here, we can do all our queries. So I don't know if how many of you attended the previous session on Exchange 2013 sizing? Quite a few of you. So I don't know if you listened, but Jeff mentioned that we have integrated fast search into Exchange. What that means for e-discovery is that we are no longer using MS Search as our indexing engine, which means we get all the benefits of using fast. Now, we go do this demo for lawyers all over the world. And the single biggest thing they like about this is the KQL, or the query language that we use for e-discovery. So in here, I've got an example query. I'll show you what this means. And you'll understand the power of this query. So this scenario over here, this company that I'm demoing you on, they're a toy manufacturing company who are in a litigation suit with another toy manufacturing company complaining that their teddy bear design has been stolen, although the teddy bears have been there for all of eternity. And what they do know is anything that this company's rep has sent to the other company, they want to find out. So the way they do that is wingtip near toy. It could be toys, whatever it is, the wildcard character, which is extremely useful for e-discovery. And this particular word over here, near, this is a result of the work that the FAST team has done. And what near means is anything that is either one word or two words or three words. So wingtip can be separated by one or two or three words between toys, and you would still be able to find those results. So this is really important for the lawyers because it helps scope down their query. It helps them a lot to kind of reduce the amount of data that they have to process, which is a direct relation to the amount of money that they spend on paralegals. And as you know, legal people cost a lot. And you've also got your basic and or and all your logical operators, so you can do that. Now, the other thing you can do is specify the start dates and the end dates, right? You can mention who are the users that might have sent this, who are the users who might have received this, can put all those things. And then finally, what we've got here is, this is very cool. You can actually select, you want to search items that are emails only, or do you know if there was a meeting set up, or if there was an IM, for example, so you've got all your link items, everything that you can scope it down to, right? So now, let's say I'm just saying I'm going to do everything. And I've got my query set up. And then finally over here, the big question, do I want to place all of this on hold? And if you see how smooth the transition was, you finish your e-discovery, and at the end of it, you can choose to either place these items on hold or not. Now, in the beginning, if I had gone and said, you know, these are the mailboxes, and I say include all user mailbox content and hit next, this is basically my legal hold of Exchange 2010, effectively. Right? So it's going to hold all the data in those mailboxes. So you can choose to do it either this way, or you know, you can choose to do it the legal hold way. The other thing that you can do is specify the number of days you want to hold this for. And I'll explain the scenario to you when I'm describing the MRM feature. But what this means is it's a rolling hold. So if I get an item today that matches a certain query, and that item will be preserved for, let's say, if I put in 7 years over there, you have to put it in days. So you do the calculation. Say I say 7 years, then anything that is older than 7 years is up for deletion. You can delete that item. But for those 7 years, that item can never be deleted. The item can never be tampered with. The way we do the tampering part is called copy on write, which means that any edit to that particular item will be a copy of that will be made in the dumpster in what is called the versions folder. So you can make as many edits as you want, but the originals and all subsequent edits are preserved in Exchange. So this is how you do in place hold in Exchange. So let's say I say hold definitely, and I hit finish. So it's going to take some time to finish that. While that is running, I'm going to show you one more thing. So this is a previous search that I created. I'm going to show you a discovery, an e-discovery demo. All right, this is done. All good. I'm going to close that. This usually takes some time to refresh because I've got a lot of federation going on between my SharePoint and Exchange clients. So it takes a little bit of time to load, but any questions about in-place hold till now? Yeah. So the way it's actually, just to repeat the question, we do say that the 2010 legal hold is deprecated when you do Exchange 2013. The way we've implemented in-place hold, and I'll talk to you about that, I'll show you a demo of what that actually happens behind the scenes. It's actually a search object that we are talking about over here. Whereas legal hold on 2010 was a flag on the mailbox, right? Now, how many of you know what the manage folder assistant is? Okay. For those who don't know, it's an automated process that runs pretty much every night or however you want to schedule it. Bharat will correct me now, but it's always on. But it's an intelligent process that goes through your mailboxes and deletes the items that it's supposed to delete and moves the items that it's supposed to move to the archive. That's its job. The way it knows what to do is using the policies that you create in your retention tags. So when you place a user on legal hold in 2010, what it's telling the MRM assistant is skip that mailbox, right? Whereas in place hold, on the other hand, it behaves a little differently. And since we are in the topic of hold, let me just jump back to the presentation and tell you what it actually looks like. So this is the dumpster in Exchange 2013. If you see, the difference between dumpster in 2010 and 2013 is the discovery hold folder, right? In 2010, if an item was deleted, this is what I showed you, deleted items, and you delete it from there, it goes into deletions. And when you hit purge from there, it goes into purges. So till now, nothing's changed. This is Exchange 2010. In 2013, though, that item actually gets moved from the purges to the discovery holds folder. So if you upgrade your Exchange server from 2010 to 2013, items are now going to be moved into this discovery holds folder. And I'll skip through these things because they're not really relevant. It's this final thing over here that's important, 6C. The Manage Folder Assistant, what it basically does is it evaluates the query that I just entered in my demo. It goes against all the mailboxes that I mentioned in my query. And it says, anything that matches that query, I'm going to keep. Anything that doesn't match that query, I'm going to delete. So that's the way in-place hold works behind the scenes. Any questions about that? So this way we can say, OK, if it matches the query, we go pick the mailboxes. So on every mailbox, we have a flag saying it is enabled, in-place hold is enabled on that mailbox. So a mailbox can have multiple in-place holds because they're all search objects associated with the mailbox. So all the search objects, just so you know, are located in the arbitration mailbox or the system mailbox that you guys are familiar with in 2010. It's the same concept in 2013. So when the folder assistant runs, it goes, fetches the query that matches the mailbox, runs the query on this folder, and anything that matches keeps it, anything else it deletes. So that's the way in-place hold works. Now, switching back to the demo on e-discovery. So I've got this one particular search that I started running before. So it's called Compliance for SOX. So if you see here, it's a test query that I ran. This is the estimate. So what I can go here and do is I can either estimate the search results again, or I can preview the search results. If I hit preview, wait for it to load. I've already got a window open with the preview. So what I do have here is that particular query. So the query that I entered for this particular one was Northwind or Traders and Marketing, right? For this query that I ran on, let me see the mailboxes that I picked. So I had all these employees. So I've got a DL in there as well. So when you're selecting your discovery query, you can actually pick a DL, and it's going to go and pick all the users in the DL and do a search on those mailboxes. So I've got all my employees over here. So it's quite a large search. So that's why it's taking some time. But if I see the preview, you see that it's got all my mailboxes. I can go check and see what items there are throughout everyone, or I can go and see individual mailboxes. So if I pick Katie's mailbox, for example, and this particular feature is available only for the persons that you have given the RBAC role to do e-discovery for. So the lawyer, for example, can go in and say, OK, I'm looking for evidence right now. These are the things that match my, you know, the query that I said. She or he will look at the estimate and say, OK, maybe I need to modify my query to make it a little more focused so that I don't get, you know, 47 MB of results. I can focus it down to 3 MB of results, for example. So anything that matches that query is available for the discovery officer. This is all OWA-based, so you can go in and preview it. But the cool thing is none of this can be changed by the discovery officer. Although it is all in place, at this point of time, we are actually pulling data from multiple mailboxes. We are still not making a copy anywhere. It's all in place, and it's available to the discovery officer. Now, they can go in and say, you know, I want to look at, you know, the attachments, for example, or I want to see what this person has said. Really easy to do e-discovery in Exchange 2013. The other option that you have is once you know that this is the final query and this is what I like to do, you can go ahead and copy the search results into the discovery mailbox, export it as PST. I think the export feature is coming in CU2, for example. I'm not sure. CU2? Oh, CU1. OK. So then you will be able to export the e-discovery results in a PST to you know, give it to the opposing counsel, for example. And I think a couple of other formats are supported as well, right? EDRM?
That's from SharePoint.
Okay. So the cool thing is you can do all of this from SharePoint as well. All you need to do is set up federation, set up trust, and then you'll be able to access your Exchange mailboxes from SharePoint, and you can do all of this e-discovery from SharePoint Exchange. Yeah. You know?
What was that again?
So the question is, if an attachment is RMS protected, does e-discovery, can e-discovery do a search on it?
Yes. If it is IRM protected against an RMS server in your organization, it will decrypt that and doing e-discovery.
Yeah. But please do send me that follow-up question. My alias should be there. And any follow-up questions, please do send me. But this one particularly, I know we have been going back and forth, so it's still under a little bit of...
No,
okay.
S5, PGP, or any right. Encryption, obviously, is not going to be searchable.
Yeah. When you do e-discovery, you get this amazing experience in 2013. Any questions on e-discovery? Yeah.
And you say, I'm going to keep you on hold for indefinitely.
Yeah.
That user can go into that email,
yeah.
Edit the attachment, take out the confidential statement. Do you still need to put single item recovery on?
So the question was, if you place a person on in-place hold, is SIR still required? Now, it's kind of tricky. The answer is yes, because SIR covers everything. Right now, you want SIR for 30 days, for example, whereas in-place hold is going to cover only the stuff that matches that particular query. Anything else is going to get deleted by the managed folder assistant. So yes, the answer is yes. Yep. But if you are placing a legal hold or a full, you did say all content. Or did you say query?
Whatever the filter is or whether it's all content.
So if it is all content, doesn't matter, though, because at the end of the day, if that particular item matched the query, then all copies, all edits are captured.
And you have to have SIR on for that?
No, that is you can do that within placehold. Yep. Any other questions on e-discovery? So the query length, for example, that you enter, we have a 10,000 character limit, and the number of mailboxes that you can place on hold is 5,000 at this point of time. So how many people here actually have more than 5,000 users in their organization? OK, quite a few of you. So I guess when you guys do your 2013 deployment, I would recommend that you talk to your Microsoft consultants. Because when you do in-place hold, you can only do It's an e-discovery search, right? So the search object can only handle 5,000 mailboxes at a time. So you might want to make sure that you have that covered, or you might have to batch it into, two or three. But the reason we said 5,000 was typically not everyone in the organization is included in a litigation. It's usually subsets of people who are included in a litigation. And the maximum we've seen is like around 200 or 300 people. But we are working to increase that limit, and any feedback on that, if you have an edge case scenario, we would definitely like to know. And then, like I mentioned before, the character limit in the KQL syntax is 10,000, and you can have as many keywords as you want in there to, yeah. So he. Yeah, so that's what I mentioned before. So the question was, what happens if a person tries to modify an email? When you try to modify an email, every modification you make, a copy is made, including the original and stored in the versions folder that I showed you earlier. Yeah. Anything else? All right. So let me quickly jump here. So this is the versions folder that I was talking about over here. I don't know if my mouse is, oh, over here. There it is. So that's where it's stored. Yep. All right. Now, how do you actually manage hold using PowerShell? How many of you are more comfortable using PowerShell compared to ECP? OK. How many of you prefer ECP over PowerShell? Let me ask that. Oh, that's very few. I would, however, recommend that for in-place hold, ECP is a better solution. And the reason is this is a case management tool. When we designed this feature, we talked to a lot of lawyers. And the lawyers typically don't know how to use PowerShell. And those are the guys given access to, you know, the discovery features. So if you do really want to use PowerShell, and this is how you would do it, you would use new mailbox search, and then you would look for in-place holds. And in order to find all the holds that a person is on, you would have to do getMailbox.inPlaceHolds. If you're using ECP, on the other hand, it's really simple, really straightforward. I'll show you guys what it looks like. So if all I have to do is go into my recipients list, and in there, if I go here, right there, it just shows me all the holds that this user is under. I can go click the details. It'll give me the goods of the holds. And then I can go and see what the query is for that hold and what duration is for the hold and so on and so forth. So typically, we expect more people to use ECP to do hold management compared to PowerShell. Don't know why the data center is slow or the network is slow. I'm still using the wireless, but let me jump in. All right. MRM. Now, the reason I put this picture was a lot of us accumulate a lot of junk email. And this could come back and haunt us. The reason is because today, storage is cheap. We have archiving, so which means in exchange, we can grow our mailboxes to 100 GB, 200 GB, not at all a problem. But it is a problem if you're in a tightly regulated industry, for example. Let's say I'm the Wall Street bank that's got all these fraud traders. If I go to court and say I have a policy that deletes email that is older than 7 years, and then some guy comes and says, hey, 10 years ago, Deepak went and traded, you know, Enron shares, knowing that it's going to fall. My company can say, 7 years, that's my policy. I'm not required by law to produce these documents. And the court will say, and the court will rule in my company's favor. And this is a very important thing, because not lots of people know this. If you have a clearly defined retention policy, you don't have to put yourself at risk. And the way you do that is through MRM. And MRM stands for Messaging Records Management. What that means is it's going to help you do three things. The first one, of course, storage management. You can have a 100 GB mailbox, or you can choose to say, no, everyone in my organization gets only 2 GB quota. And how do I enforce this? By saying, you know, I'm going to delete anything older than, let's say, 2 years. So that way, I only have data that matches or that is constrained to 2 GB, for example. The second thing is business requirements. So I work for Microsoft, and I get two kinds of emails. So I'm a program manager, so I work with a lot of other teams. And they keep sending me their design documents on projects that we are working on together. So I know exactly, OK, I'm working with the SharePoint team. This is a particular design for in-place hold. I'm going to file it away somewhere. But then I also get a ton of email about people wanting to sell their cars and bikes and golf clubs in Microsoft, which we cannot do anything about, which still comes to my inbox. So those kinds of emails, they're just junk. I know that I'm never going to look at them, but it still occupies space in my mailbox. So the way I do this is, I use MRM to say, you know, don't delete anything that is business critical, but anything that is in my spam folder or your Microsoft classifieds folder, delete it after 3 days. That's one way to look at it. A third one, which I mentioned just now, is you can have a policy that says anything, my company only holds data for 7 years. Anything that is older than 7 years is going to get deleted. The third one is important, and I'll address that first because it requires a little bit of trickery while you are setting up Exchange. Because the way you do that is, I'm going to hold everything for 7 years and then delete anything older than 7 years, which means I need to do two things. The first thing I need to do is set up an in-place hold for 7 years, which means anything that is 7 years or younger is going to be preserved. It'll never be deleted. It'll never be modified. And then I say older than 7 years, I go set up a deletion policy that will go and delete anything older than 7 years. So you have to use a combination of both in order for the code to say, OK, you have a proper standing retention policy in your organization. So how does this work, though? I'll quickly switch over to the demo and show you what I mean. So in here, I've got my what is called retention tags and policies. How many of you have used this before, retention tags and policies? OK. For the benefit of all the other people, I'm just going to give a retention tags 101. What is a tag? A tag is simply it's got an action, and it's got a rule for it. The action could be one of three things. You can say, move that item to an archive, or delete that item, or don't do anything to that item. And the condition on that is, after how long do I want to delete? After how long do I want to archive? Or don't touch it. There is a third part to this, which is the folder that the item is in. That's another property of a tag. So these three things is what makes up a retention tag. Now, how many of you guys believe in complete admin control? You don't want your users to have any kind of freedom, for example. Anyone? All right, so we do have takers. So for guys like him, we've actually created what is called the default policy tag, which means he can go in and say, I'm going to apply this policy to all the users in my organization, and they can do nothing about it. Of course, they can save copies of it in their hard drive, but that's not typically what we want people to do. But for the people who say, in a very regulated industry, for example, insurance in the United States, people are very careful about these things. So the IT admin will say, I'm going to do a retention policy, which is a delete after 7 years for the entire organization. Anything older than 7 years will be deleted, and the user can do nothing about it. And this applies to the entire mailbox. Now, there's a second kind of tag, which is the RPT. The RPT is exactly like the first one I mentioned, except it gives him a little more granularity, which means he can say items in the inbox, for example, keep them for seven, or delete them after 7 years. But items in the junk mail folder, delete them after 30 days. So it gives you, all the system folders. It gives you that little bit of granularity that you need. Then there's the third type of customer who says, no, I do trust my users, right? I know exactly what they're doing. Microsoft is one of those companies. I'm allowed to judge which items I'm going to keep, and I'm allowed to judge which items need to be deleted. And for that, it's the way we do that is by providing what is called personal tags. A personal tag is something that's available for the end user, which he can use to override what the admin has provided. So if I don't know what your name is. Mal? Mel? All right, so if Mel decides, for example, to say, I'm going to give them a little bit more freedom. I have a default 7-year delete, but for all the people in the financial arm of my organization, I'm going to give them a personal tag saying, do not delete, for example, or delete after 10 years or delete after 20 years. Now, they will know exactly which items they want to keep. And they can go and either set this tag on an individual item, or they can set it on a folder. So it's basically like creating an exception to the rule that Mel has created. So that's the way personal tags work. Now, so I've got my default tag, which is the all. I've got my retention policy tag, which is the system folders. And then I've got the personal tags. I combine the three of these. I get what is called a policy. So it's like I have bunches of papers everywhere. I take the papers and I put them and make a book, and I give books to a student. It's exactly like that. My papers are the individual tags. I bunch them together and make a book, which is the policy, and I apply the policy to the mailbox, which is like giving a book to a student. It's exactly the way it works. Now, let me give you a demo of what that looks like. So in here, I've got my retention tags. So if I want to create a new tag, these are the three options I get. The first one, which is what Mel likes, which is the entire mailbox. The second one is what you want to apply to a default folder. And the third one, which is available to the end users. So let me pick the second one, because I've got more to show over there. In here, I can say these are the folders that I want to, you know, separate it out. So for my inbox, I could say 30 days. For my outbox, lesser than that. Sent items, etc. So conversation history over here is what addresses your link items in 2013. So you can also set policies on the link items as well. So once you create these tags, I've already got a bunch over here. So there's this one tag that I have here called inbox 2-day delete. Let me open that up and show you. So it's the name is inbox 2-day delete. It's applied to the default folder, which is inbox. And the action is delete and allow recovery when the item reaches 2 days, right? Now, this particular tag I've added to a policy called default MRM policy. Now, if I look at my default MRM policy and see what are the tags available in there, if you see, I've got my inbox 2-day delete over there. I can add other tags in here as well. I can just go here and say, these are the other tags that are available. I can go and add the acquisitions, and it'll just add to that particular policy. All right, so now I have the default MRM policy. I now need to apply this policy to the mailbox. The way I do that is, let's say I go to recipients, and I select Dennis. All right, so I've got Dennis's mailbox open here. I'll refresh and show you that this is live, this is real. So if you see all the items over here, April 4th, 25th of February, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I'm going to go and apply this particular tag on his mailbox, and let me show you what happens. So I've got the inbox 2-day delete, right? So tip, what you expect to see is everything should get deleted. So let me open this guy, mailbox features, and change it to the default MRM policy. Hit save. So now this guy now has the default MRM policy. But then something has to happen for that policy to take effect. That's, again, the manage folder assistant. So I now go into my PowerShell and schedule the manage folder assistant to run on Dennis's mailbox. So Dennis D. So this is going to schedule the manage folder assistant. It's running on his mailbox right now. Let's see. A refresh. Still there. So what that initial thing does is it kind of goes and queues the items up. So I think it'll probably take a few minutes for the manage folder assistant to actually kick off, because it gets queued. The manage folder assistant, like Bharat mentioned, it runs pretty much every day. And what it is intelligent in is figuring out what are the times for it to run. If you're deploying MRM, how many of you have actually deployed retention tags and policies in a 2010 environment? And what is the size of your organization? More than 5,000? Anyone? Yes. Did you face any performance issues? No? That's a good thing. There you go. So we've kind of, in 2010, we had a bunch of performance issues because one of the things that happens is every item gets stamped with an expiration date. And that expiration date is synchronized to Outlook. And when that happens in a really large organization, for example, it's going to kill your network bandwidth and it's going to kill your Outlook client. So in 2013, we've made a bunch of fixes to, you know, not do this. So we've made some store level fixes. So the synchronization of the property is just that property, which is less than, I think, 5 KB or something like that. So we no longer have those issues. But in 2010, you would still, you could potentially face those issues if you have a large number of users in your organization. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to log out and log back in, because that kind of helps sometimes. So sign out. Dennis D. Discovery. See the password. There you go. It's all gone. So the managed folder assistant went in and deleted all the items from the inbox because that was the policy that we set. So that's the way it works. Now, if I want to recover these items, the way I would do that, and so just so you know, these items, though they've been permanently deleted, they are still, because this guy is on hold, those items are not really permanently deleted. They are stored in the dumpster of the organization, of the mailbox. So if I go into deleted items, I'll see if they are here. So I'm not finding it here. So go here and recover deleted items. There you go. So all the items that are actually here, I can actually go and retrieve each one of those items. It's easier to do in Outlook than OWA for some reason, but you can go and do multi-select in Outlook, which you cannot do in OWA, but you can search in OWA. If you're looking for a particular item to recover, it's easier to do in OWA. So anyway, this stuff, even though it's been deleted, is still accessible to eDiscovery, so the user can try and, you know, delete those items, but it's never going away. So that's effectively my MRM presentation. Any questions about records management till now? Okay. Yes. Can you repeat that, please? Okay, so the question is there any compression used in archiving? The answer is the archive mailbox is exactly the same as your primary mailbox. So whatever compression you get with your primary mailbox is what you're getting with your archive mailbox. And I don't know if there's any compression with the primary mailbox. If there is, then that's what you get. It is not at all different. Yeah. So this is it's a great question. His question was, where do you store the archive mailbox in a database in a JBOD? Again, the recommendations are no different from how you would do a primary mailbox. The only thing is you can actually locate it in a different database than your primary mailbox. We do give you that flexibility. But from a storage calculator standpoint, I know I discussed this with Jeff as well. There is no actual mention of the archive mailbox in the storage calculator, so you might have to do some kind of workaround to make sure that, you know, you include the quota that you assign for the archive mailbox in your primary calculator as well. Any other question? Yeah. There is no specific recommendation. Like I said, it is exactly like your primary mailbox. But you, if you have a set of expensive disks that you want to use for your primary, you can deploy cheaper disks and do your archive. If that helps you save costs, then we can definitely do that. Yeah.
The challenge is in some organizations,
yeah,
they may want to move away from EB.
Absolutely.
So when you extract all this data,
yep,
and you want to use archive in an exchange.
Yep. Sure.
You may go over that 2 terabyte limit.
Absolutely. So the question is, if people want to move from EV, Symantec eVault, into Exchange, one of the things you need to do is to import the data from EV and put it into archives. And your question was, what if it goes over 2 terabytes? So at this point, unfortunately, there is no workaround. The truth is we've not seen a single mailbox of 2 terabytes till now. I don't know if you have. Yeah. Oh. So that's why a really, really big thing to clarify over here. The archive mailbox is per user. It is exactly like your primary mailbox. Whereas if you take EV, for example, it is an organizational archive, which means everybody's data is stored in one location. It's a single instance, whereas here, we do multi-instance, which means if an email comes to Bharat and me, and we both have archives, which means we both have 4 mailboxes. I have a primary mailbox, I have an archive mailbox. Bharat has a primary and an archive, which means an email goes, there's an instance of that email in his mailbox and in mine. But there is no copy. That's the thing, though. Does that make sense? Right.
Here it's per mailbox.
Exactly.
Archive is per mailbox.
So the thing is, now if... Now, I will tell you that there are third-party, I think Transvault is one of them that we met. What they do is they actually take the data from EV and they multi-instance it, which means you could have one instance of that mail saying it was sent to Bharat, me, and Sarah, for example. But when they retrieve it and push it out into Exchange, they actually send an email, that same email, one into Bharat's mailbox, one into mine, and one into Sarah's. Does that make sense? Okay, maybe we can follow up afterwards. Absolutely. Yes, sir. He raised his hand. Sorry. Absolutely. So his question was, can I have the primary and archive mailbox in different environments? You can have your primary mailbox on-prem. You can have your archive mailbox in Office 365. And that's the session that we are actually doing on Friday, 12 p.m., and we'll show you exactly how to deploy that and move the archive mailbox back and forth, move data from primary to the archive, which is in 2 different locations. We'll be doing demos of all of that. Yeah. 1 second.
So I have all my users on Office 365 by now, and I use the legal hold not for anything to do with litigation, but just as a backup, so in case someone asks for something.
Yep.
So for that particular scenario, is there any reason to switch to an in-place hold? Or because, you know, I go to switch on legal hold and it says deprecated. So, I mean, should I bother?
Sure. The question is, for the purpose of backup, is it worth replacing in-place legal hold with in-place hold? And the answer is no. If it is easier for you to manage, I think that is what you should go with. It's a lot simpler. Yeah. Public folders. So the question is, are there retention policies for public folders? Now, are you asking about the 2013 public folders or the old one? So for the 2013 public folders, we still don't have support, but we're working on it. I don't have an exact timeline on when it'll be ready, but if we do get enough feedback from people, from customers saying, yeah, this is it's a blocker for us, then we will definitely, you know, move things along faster. Yeah, so please do send me emails saying, yeah, we need retention in public folders, and I'll forward it to the right teams. I do not know.
Public folders?
Public folders.
No, MRM is not supported.
It was never supported, right? Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
If you place your mailbox on hold, it starts to grow very large. Will it be a performance impact for the user? Will it not notice anything?
So the question is, if a mailbox is placed on hold and the mailbox grows to a really large size, well, from an exchange standpoint, there is no performance impact. It's, if you're using OWA, for example, your search is going to work great. Indexing does not have a problem. We've tested it all the way up to 400 gigs. Works great. The only problem you might have is Outlook, and depends on which client you're using. But if you're using Outlook 2013, then with this slider, you should not have any issues. Yep. So for all the people who are using eVault, I wanted to kind of show you guys what this is meant for Microsoft. I'll skip through these things because they're not really relevant. This is what we do at Microsoft. So typically an eDisk, and you guys must know, we are slapped with antitrust litigation all the time. So typically we have almost 1.2 terabytes of data preserved at any point of time. And if you know the e-discovery process, that's how much is first preserved. That's your hold. When you place legal hold, for example, that's what happens. You end up collecting almost 1.2 terabytes of data. And then that is first process, which is a really manual process. And then it's reviewed by the legal people. And then finally, the amount that is actually used is 249 pages of it. And this is for any large organization. You would think that it is proportional to what we go through. Now, previously in Exchange 2010, this is what we had as a solution. So we had all our Exchange information in one place. We had all the local data, which is on disks and drives. And then finally, we had SharePoint as well. And since we did not have any single way to get things into one single place and do e-discovery across using one single tool, we had to do a lot of third-party tools. And this was costing us a lot of money. It was costing us a lot of time. However, with Exchange 2013 and SharePoint 2013, we completely got rid of all our third-party dependencies. So all the way until the linear review, which is done by the lawyers, we no longer use any third-party tools. What does this mean for us? This is how much time we save. So from a collection standpoint, it used to take us weeks. Now it takes us minutes. I cannot actually tell you the amount of money we save because I guess that's classified. But it is a huge saving. Unfortunately, I cannot even say if it is million or thousands or whatever. But you get the picture. The process itself has become so much more simple, so much more straightforward, and predictable. This is because we have lawsuits from so many different places that we had to attend to each one separately, and each one was different. Now with the Exchange 2013 tools for e-discovery across SharePoint, Link, and Exchange, the process is so much more predictable. We've actually been able to turn around and answer all litigation requests far ahead of time. This is huge for us. So the reason I put this up was not as an advertising thing, but we really are feeling the benefit of using Exchange 2013 over third-party tools, such as eVault, for example, where you would have to go search in multiple places. You would have to search your SharePoint stuff in multiple places. You no longer have that problem. How many of you actually have SharePoint and Exchange and Link? So for all of you guys, I would definitely recommend going through this stuff, see how actually case management from SharePoint works, how e-discovery from SharePoint works. I'm pretty sure that your lawyers will be really thrilled by what we've built here. And for the business decision makers, if people say, wait to upgrade to 2013, this in itself is the biggest cost saving that you can get. And the biggest reason why lots of people in the United States, at least, have decided to upgrade to 2013 because of the reduction in discovery costs. All right, so I want to wrap up because I think I'm out of time, but the key takeaways, the first thing I mentioned was risk mitigation. with your e-discovery, with your in-place hold and MRM, you can make sure that your organization never gets litigated and you don't have the right data, so you will never get fined. Business interruption, we've made sure that the UI is really compatible with all your lawyers and your end user experience does not get affected in any way because of compliance. And then finally, the targeted hold means that you don't have to hold too much data, but just the right amount because you can query and modify your query. And then finally, it makes it a lot more predictable and reduces your dependency, if not eliminate the dependency on all the third-party tools. So thank you all for coming. Appreciate you. And if you have any questions, please do come and ask me. All right. Thank you.